The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11.
Now on Mitchell's Front Page, Trent, talking tech.
Good morning to you, Trent. How are you this morning?
G'day, Mitchell. Very well.
Good to have you back on the program, and there's always plenty of stuff happening in the world of tech. First of all, PayID security. What's the latest there?
Yeah, a lot of people would have heard the conversations in the news in the last 24 hours, the fact that there had been a breach to the PayID service. Now, if you're not familiar with what PayID is, it's essentially a fast transfer from bank to bank. Many of the financial institutions in Australia are participating in the system, which has been developed here in the country, and people can basically set up like a nickname to their account. So all they need is a mobile number or an email address that they can use to reference someone's bank account. So transfers can be done easily and quickly. But there was a loophole in the system. The payments provider Cuscal was down to part of the problem that happened, and it was breached through the CUA credit union's systems on the 16th of August, which is a couple of Fridays ago. Now, this breach didn't actually cause any financial grief for anybody. Basically, the people managed to get away in the exploit with PayID details. So if someone was using an email address or a mobile phone number as their nickname, and there was a certain percentage of people who were using mobile numbers, their full name, BSB and account number, which is still a bit of a concern. They reckon it's about 3.5% of the 3.5 million customers who are registered. So it's in the tens of thousands at least, but it is a low number overall. And so far, the banks have said they've not actually had any fraudulent cases. You know, we really don't like people retrieving our details unknowingly. But I think in one of these cases where you've got something like PayID, it's generally, in the vast majority of cases, nothing more than, you know, paying in details. Although, if you were to get someone who was unscrupulous and was able to, I guess, set up a direct service arrangement, they could take funds out of accounts. But, yeah, no fraud cases detected at this point in time. They're plugging the gap. And, you know, from personal recommendations, I reckon if you're going to use PayID, it's probably better if you use an email address rather than a mobile phone number because, you know, it's not very nice having your mobile phone number out in the wild if you're you're not open to, you know, sharing that with the general public.
Yeah, the bank that I'm with has that PayID service, and you can enter someone's phone number to send money to them, as you say. And then I think once you've done that, it then spits out what their name is so that you can verify the correct account name, but it doesn't then give you the full BSB and account number that you're talking about. So that would be concerning. But now you mention it, it is concerning if anyone can enter a mobile number and see what the name is that is associated with that number. I think a few people would feel uncomfortable about that information getting out there.
Yeah, it's the beginning of being able to, you know, grab details to, I guess, further identify someone. You know, if they're close to home, they could attempt to be retrieving, you know, more information about you, even, you know, to go as far as traditional attempts where people actually take, you know, information from your mail. If you put all the pieces together, you could certainly, you know, cause a little bit of concern of, you know, identity theft. But, you know, surely these banks are learning a thing or two from this situation so that we don't have, you know, any more exploits on the PayID system, let alone, you know, general internet banking systems, given that, you know, there's banks that are looking at giving up their traditional forms of transactions through telephone banking, for instance. I know Bank of Queensland announced, you know, in the last day or so that they're looking to wind that service up because the demand just isn't there, and, you know, a lot of stuff can be done online now.
Yeah, that makes a great deal of sense, I think, and the only time that I think telephone banking has really become in use has been when the banks have had these tech glitches and their online banking has collapsed, and then they've said, call this number to do banking. But other than that, it's probably just too big of a security vulnerability, really.
Well, yes, there is the vulnerability there, and you know, the ease of use is not there as well. I've always found that they're a rather clunky sort of system to navigate, and you know, if you've got to remember all these different choices to press this button, press that button,
yep,
get a bit lost in it all.
Yep, for sure. Now, continuing on the theme of security, Apple has put out a security update. They're trying to crack down on jailbaiting, is that right? Or jailbreaking, rather.
Yes. Jailbreaking is basically where someone can, I guess, circumvent security features of the phone. Security features in the form of being able to install third-party applications and also make adjustments to the ecosystem, the operating system of iOS. It was possible in earlier versions of the phones to be able to do this, and in the vast amount of cases, it wasn't any, horrific security breaches. It was more of a case of a group of enthusiasts would, I guess, jailbreak the mobile phone so that they could install their own apps and you know, I guess, circumvent the app store so that they could have applications for free when they should have been paying for them, for instance. In the most recent iOS update, 12.4, I should say, which happened in July, they apparently accidentally introduced the ability for someone to jailbreak a mobile phone again. And I guess Apple's concern is, you know, they could use it for a negative purpose and could use this to, you know, hack users unwillingly, unknowingly. And so they've released another security update, which will be available to phones shortly, which people can run through, which will, I guess, close the loop that's been opened by this last major software update.
Yeah, one of the big arguments in favour of the App Store is obviously that Apple can vet the applications coming in and out, and that means that you're less likely to get malware. So if you jailbreak your phone, you're probably leaving all that protection behind.
Yeah, you are less likely to receive software that could, you know, cause, you know, spying of information, you know, tracking details. There's been applications that have used advertising, you know, in their systems to be able to, I guess, basically fund their little group, and also, you know, using your mobile phone to, I guess, conduct other mischievous activities. That's not possible with the App Store generally, because they've got a fairly, you know, high-level screening process. They've got a program which you have to sign up to and pay some money to be able to put an app into the App Store as well, so it is fairly stringent, a lot more stringent than Google has had on their Play Store for the Android devices. But both of them, you know, they do provide a level of protection against, you know, general hacking attempts.
But there still have been some famous breaches, haven't there, where app developers have got past the various checks and balances that Apple has.
Most definitely. And in those cases, you know, once they're detected, the app gets pulled, but people still have to actually remove the physical application from their device. But there's really, when you look at it in the large scheme of things and the amount of applications that get submitted to these app stores, it's still really only a small number. And, you know, they're usually in, you know, utilities and games, and, you know, they do have some suspicious signs in some cases as well.
Now, drone weaponization, is that a big problem?
I wouldn't have thought it was a big problem, but apparently it's big enough for the Federal Aviation Authority over in the US to put out a warning to people in America, the country where, you know, people have got the right to bear arms, that they don't need to be weaponizing their drones. They've basically looked over a bit of footage that's been online with relation to, you know, fireworks shooting party goers and a few other little cases where they've had someone weaponizing a drone and said, well, you know, we can't have this. It's a violation of rules. There's state offences against it as well. And, you know, you could be fined $25,000 or, you know, be thrown in jail as well, because you might have a right to bear arms, but putting it on a drone is not, you know, bearing the arms.
Yep. Oh, we've lost Trent there. I think he's just dropped out. You still with us, Trent?
Yes.
Sorry, the line just went a bit funny there. No, So $25,000 for weaponizing a drone. I think that's an appropriate penalty. Why would you want to do that?
Yeah, it's pretty absurd. The fine is fairly reasonable. I reckon a jail sentence too wouldn't go astray. But you know, we all know how it is in the courts, and
we do.
Some things are handled.
Well, Trent, thanks for being on the program. What's your website once again?
We Talk Tech at techwrap.net.
Thank you very much, Trent Geddes there, our program tech guy. We'll catch up with him next week.
The Mitchell's Front Page podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 to 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.